it's up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello, I'm Vaughan Bennison. Welcome to this week's edition of New Horizons. This week, as promised last week, the second part of my discussion with Vicky Rundle, Deputy CEO of the National Disability Insurance Agency. If you remember, we were in the middle of a discussion about purchasing of adaptive technology. So I guess once again, it comes back to the individual. I mean, for example, somebody who's not currently employed wouldn't be eligible for job access and yet might still need a Braille note taker in order to attempt to find work or, you know, to learn to use the product in order to get a job.
Yes, it's a good, really good point. Now, of course, if people can't access job access, then, you know, and they needed a Braille note taker, then, you know, that would be a support that would most likely go into their plan. But I just did want to make a comment about job access and also DES, Disability Employment Services. One thing people may not understand is that if you're not in employment, there are lots of government services like DES, for example, who will give you a lot of the supports that you need to try and help you get a job, training. There are things which we fund in people's plans, which also, you know, Disability Employment Services would also consider a good investment and would also fund for people to help get them into an employment situation. And we announced recently, a couple of weeks ago, the Minister announced the new Employment Task Force. And one of the things we are going to do is look at the interrelationship between Jobs Australia, you know, the Department of Jobs and what they fund, Department of DSS, looking at what they fund with Disability Employment Services, looking at job access and the NDIS to make sure that our participants have got access to things much more easily. So we want to make sure that if people are trying to get access to DES, job access and other things, that they get treated as a priority because, after all, they are people with disability that we're trying to get into employment.
Now, one of the things that blind and vision impaired people often need both for home and for work is a guide dog. Now, we know that the NDIS is able to fund guide dogs. Perhaps you could talk a bit about how that works.
I guess the first thing we'd say about every support is that when we talk to people about their support needs, we talk about the options and what might be available to them and what they consider to be the best support for them. And so some people with vision impairment would say that they don't wish to use a guide dog and that they don't consider they need a guide dog. But if a person does consider that that is the best support for them and if that is deemed to be the best support, and generally if a person says they need a guide dog, the planner sitting with them will explore why and what benefits they would expect to get out of a guide dog compared to something else. But at the end of the day, the NDIS does fund guide dogs, quite a few guide dogs. And when we do fund a guide dog, we would fund the acquisition of the guide dog itself, the ongoing costs for the guide dog, food, veterinary fees, things like that, and, of course, any ongoing training that a dog might require. As a general rule.
Well, what I'd like to explore a little bit is, I don't know whether there's an NDIS term for it, but what I would call non-standard services. So services, for example, that come up from time to time that one person needs that might never have been accessed before or might have very rarely been accessed but certainly wouldn't be considered a standard service. IRA is a good example of that, is an ongoing service which has so many ramifications for blind and vision impaired people, but it might not be something that the NDIA has yet had a lot of experience with. What might the process be to get a new service established?
One of the things we do is our price guide. You know, we've got a price guide and it has line items in the price guide, and what it's done is it's tried to identify all of the most common supports or the supports that people use. Now, over time, I think, you know, that price guide changes because as we learn about new things and as we grow, as new things enter the market, which are tried and tested, and people think that they're fantastic and they really benefit people, then that would be something we'd go, okay, well, would we add that to the price guide? But having said that, a person's plan, what we're trying to do is get the most flexibility for people in their plan that is possible. So in some of the core supports and capacity building, if a person has that funding in their plan, they should be able to choose to use that funding to get their best outcomes. That's what the scheme is all about. That, to go to your point on individuality, I would imagine that you could choose to acquire something like IRA because that's something to you and would get really good outcomes. The only thing that I think we'd be worried about would be things that, where it's come to our attention that some things are unsafe, and we'd hope that the manufacturer would put out alerts and things like that. But do you know what I mean? Mm. It's the whole thing about the scheme is that it is individual, and that we don't want to be prescriptive about what people can buy or not with their money. In fact, if you're a self-managed participant, well, you can buy that, and we wouldn't even know that you'd bought it with your money. And if you get flexible funding in your core supports, then you can buy it. The only thing is that you would need to make sure that there's a provider, where you would get it from. The provider of those things would need to be registered so that they could get paid.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute then, the different types of plans that are available. You can have a self-managed plan, which I assume is just as it's written on the box, you manage everything yourself. How does that actually work?
When a person says they would like to self-manage, there is a range of questions that we will ask that individual, which we call an assessment for whether or not someone can self-manage, because we want to make sure that we think that they've got the capacity and the support they need to be able to do that. And the reason we need to do that is because it's government funding, and we need to make sure that if a person is completely self-managing, that we're confident they can do that in a way that gets them the outcomes that they're seeking and is a responsible way of managing the funds. So we ask a set of questions, and if we think that a person is able to self-manage, then that is noted in their plan, and then that money becomes, it's money that becomes available to them, and they can purchase their own supports. They're even able to use unregistered providers if they so wish. And so it's a different sort of mechanism in terms of operating their plan. One of the things that they are required to do is keep receipts and about things that they have spent their funds on, and we do conduct audits on all of our work, including on self-management.
That's not the only type of plan, though, is it, that people can access?
No, that's correct. So a person can also be what we call agency managed, and that means that we will, if they want us to, we will manage that plan on their behalf. That means that things are in their plan, and they've got choice and control about how they spend it. But the providers that we pay through a self-managed plan have to be registered with us, and they're paid through our portal. The other thing is that sometimes those participants can have if they've got needs that are very complex and they need to interface with a range of different services, a lot of other mainstream services like health and so on, we'll fund in their plan what we call a support coordinator, who will also help them manage their plan, sort of like a broker, if you like, someone who'll help them get access to different services and help them manage their plan and how they choose providers. And people can also choose what we call plan managers, and these are people not like support coordinators for people with very complex needs, but these are people like financial plan managers who will manage the financial aspect of your plan for you and help you manage the payments that you've got to make.
So it sounds like you've covered everything fairly comprehensively. What portion of people do you think would fit into each category?
Now, I think our quarterly report says that we currently have around 20%, 23%, I think it is, of people that are self-managing. But it's in our published quarterly report. We've got a range of those people would also be using a plan manager, a financial intermediary, if you like, that I've just talked about. We've got the rest of the people in the scheme are what we would call agency managed. But of that number, so about, you know, a bit under 80% at the moment, but of that 80%, but of that number, there'll be a group of people, possibly around 10 to 15%, who will have what I just called a support coordinator because they have very multiple needs and they need a little bit of extra help to be able to help them manage their plan.
And how many people are we talking about in total are on the NDIS currently?
Well, at the end of September, we had 208,790 people in the scheme, and that was a 14% increase on even the last quarter. And the wonderful statistic amongst that is that one in three of those, just 63,500 people, are receiving disability supports for the first time ever. They've never had supports before from the state and territory, but they're now getting them through the scheme.
That's pretty incredible, isn't it, especially for those people?
It is. And we're just increasing quite significantly each quarter. Our numbers are going up considerably. And about, at the moment, 4,900 of those participants, or 3%, have a visual impairment.
On the face of it, that doesn't seem like an awful lot, but when you consider the range of disabilities that the NDIS supports, it's quite incredible, isn't it?
It is. It certainly is.
There's no real time limit on when you start your NDIS plan, is there? For example, if it rolls out in your area and you haven't got round to it yet, that's not really a problem, is it?
It isn't if it's months, you know, but it does become so when the state and territory will be moving out of providing disability supports. If that person was already receiving disability supports from a state and territory government, and those are supports that are going to stop being funded by the state and territory government because they've rolled that into the scheme. So what we always say to participants is don't leave it too long, because you might find that your funding for your current service is no longer there. If the state government was funding it before, you need to get that funded in your plan so you can continue on.
All right. Well, thank you very much for talking to us.
A pleasure. Yep.
Vicky Rundle there, Deputy CEO of the National Disability Insurance Agency. Just before we go, a reminder that the BCA office is currently closed, but if you'd like to email, you can email bca@bca.org.au. If you'd like any information from the phone system, you can contact 1-800-033-660. 1-800-033-660. Enjoy your Christmas and have a great new year. I'll talk to you again next week.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams. Of our dreams.